Gabriel Crone, very fascinating man. Oh, what I could do with a history of Gabriel Crone. He was thrown out of the University of Michigan. I'll tell you a little about it. It's not in the book. I've got some people. He was thrown out of the University of Michigan because always fighting with the instructors at something like 16, decided to work his way around the world, did, got back, came to Hollywood, and he was very brilliant. I mean, the reason he had so much problem is these professors were a couple of light years behind him. Got back to New York City, got back to Hollywood, signed a contract for $10,000, I believe it was, to work on his new experimental movie camera. And the company that gave him the contract paid him the money all up front and went bankrupt. So he had a year or two with no work to do. He came to New York City in the public library and started reading books on mathematics and became the inventor of something called tensor analysis. It became quite important. But then he worked for GE, where he was unusual and was not easy to work with because he had he was ahead of him. Gabriel Crone, you have to mention him in the history of electrical engineering. Because he was a character. You know about Edison, and you know about some of the other people. Well, anyway, I worked with public service and planning, and then went through a number of different jobs. I started out, well, first I started planning the low-voltage stuff, the things that go along the streets, distribution circuits, and from there I went to planning in the general offices, where I planned new substations and approved budget items and started to deal more with money. The handling of money, approving of expenditures. In the beginning, I did design work, not much, and then I began to move into the money end, and then I began to handle the decisions on large items. Should we build this $50 million line, or and that kind of thing? And I kept moving up in terms of the value of the projects I was involved in until I got to the point towards the after about 15 years, I was handling a budget of about over $1 billion a year. Part of this was the people in the company were engineers. The managers were engineers. They trusted engineers. Occasionally, let the accounting and other people do these things, and they messed them up because they did not understand the components of the project. Things would get left out. You needed a 7 circuit breakers at $4 million, and they wouldn't get it in the cost. It took somebody who understood the project, and the engineering knowledge was essential to putting together the financial figure. And the people on the top learned that, so they start giving these responsibilities to engineers. Now, admittedly, they were engineers, so they were more comfortable with other engineers doing it. So I ended up in the planning department, and later on, I took over research department, handling all research. We used to have a research budget about $70 million on top of this capital budget of over $1 billion. And ended up doing a lot of things. And finally, I was promoted to doing not just the electric system for New Jersey, but also taking on the gas system. And I did that and enjoyed it until about the point where the people that I had worked for through the years retired, and they brought in some new people from outside whom I didn't enjoy working for. So I stayed a little while, and I talked to one of my good friends was the former chairman of the board who had retired. And he talked to me, and he said, look, you're not going to be happy here the next 10 years. These new people coming in don't think technology and technical skill and technical information is important. They think this can be done by the accounting types, the financial types. Well, they weren't managers. They really weren't good men, frankly, because I think a good manager understands both the financial, the technical, the political. You got to understand it all. They brought in some new people who were not particularly good in my mind, and I had a choice of staying and griping every day or leaving, and I left. I decided to leave, and my wife thought I was a little out of my mind because I gave up my Cadillac, I gave up my helicopter, and I went to work someplace where my privileges were far less, although I did get a considerable pay increase. I was there for a little while, and then I had a chance to buy a small business. And that is the ultimate freedom, I think, is being an entrepreneur, owning your own business. I bought a small consulting firm in Washington, moved down there, and in the beginning, things were rough. I went from a staff of 350 to having my wife run the Xerox machine. But we did it. And we persevered, and now we have a very successful company. So we bootstrapped ourselves up. And doing that again, I was 53 when I did it. Doing doing that at the age 53, I would recommend to anybody.
Yeah.
It invigorates you
really.
To have a new challenge mm-hmm. and a tough one. It's like mountain climbing. If you get to the top of the mountain, God, you feel good.
Right.
But that's a quick summary. Mm-hmm. Okay.